Hi, my name is Anna Friend. I'm 47, and last year, or maybe sometime before that, I entered that unknown black hole, the perimenopause. Since then, I have discovered that even the mere mention of the M word can evoke an internal shiver from all corners of society, and this made me wonder why. Specifically, why the hell aren't we talking more about menopause? After all, it's happening to 50% of the population and is an absolute certainty for all cis women. So what's the problem? And why do we have such difficulty addressing health matters for women? So I decided to talk to women. From those that are facing the climb, viewing the mountain from afar, to those that have conquered the summit. Sort of. Yes, lots and lots of women who have shared their experiences, their viewpoints and their top tips. And my hope is that by doing this, we can start turning this ship around and stop referring to the menopause as some sort of end of usefulness type bollocks and see it for its positive possibilities. So here we go, me and my merry band of hormonal goddesses, we're taking on the change. Welcome to episode 3. If you haven't already, don't forget to check out the last 2 episodes with Rachel and Karen, where we talk about everything from self-care during menopause to the positives of HRT. This week, I get to talk to Leah, who is a physiotherapist who has worked with women experiencing early onset or surgical menopause. Here, Leah and I get down to brass tacks and have a frank and wonderful discussion about sexual pleasure during the menopause, amongst other pearls of wisdom. Leah is sharing her own personal experiences and makes no reference to clients in this discussion. Welcome, Leah.
Hi, Anna. Really
lovely to have a chat together. Thank you for joining me today. So Leah, I've got your, because I sent you a little thing. So you wrote 55 and menopausal. So you're in the menopause.
Yeah, I would say so. It's been a few years since I've had a period now, so I would count myself as menopausal.
And you've also said so far fairly easy, which has been, which is lovely. I mean, this podcast, you know, I have really wanted it to have a range of experiences on there so that it doesn't feel like a horror story, because I think it could, you know, sometimes if you're just talking about, you know, there are unfortunately so many bad stories out there of people really not enjoying their menopause and worse. So it's lovely to hear that you were. I love the fact that you love that I can't get pregnant. So that says quite a lot about you and what's happening in your life, doesn't it? Love that I can't get pregnant.
And then the
next thing you talk about is vaginal lubrication. So it's kind of like, wow, there it is. It's all going on in Leah's life. Fabulous. Yes. And I was really interested about this metabolism thing. But anyway, so can you just... And also for people who are listening, I think it's really relevant what you do for your job. So you are, I don't want to say what you are because I'm going to get it wrong. What do you do?
So I'm a physiotherapist and a lot of my work is with people who have or have had cancer and a lot of women's health. And actually, I think that's part of why I would say that the menopause has been fairly easy for me, because I've already met so many women who've been really generous with their experiences and stories of how it's been for them. So people who've had sudden onset menopause in particular because of their treatment. And so because very many times a week I would have conversations around menopausal symptoms with people for example, my own vaginal dryness. It's just been so wonderful. I've already known who to ask for help with that. Mm. So I guess if that had come up completely out of the blue and that I hadn't known that that might be a thing for me, I think I felt really ashamed, actually, and embarrassed and desperately sad that my body wasn't how it used to be and how it had always been. So I think I've been enormously helped actually by the people I've worked with, because I've already been researching products and situations for them to help with my work.
Yeah. And so you were able to just because I think that's part of the problem with perimenopause and then into menopause. And the thing is, it's a very gray area, or that seems to be what I'm getting from, you know, women that I'm talking to, is that they're, it's like you've said, I haven't had a period for many years, so therefore I would consider myself menopausal. I mean, surely, I mean, to the outside world, surely you would absolutely be menopausal, but there is still this kind of, and even if you go to a doctor, there's a sort of, well, you know, kind of shilly-shallying around. Are you in the club or are you not in the club? what's going on sort of thing. You know, it's crazy.
And that thing about the perimenopause as well, because I feel like that's come in as a thing during my lifetime, actually.
Yeah.
Because as a child, I would have heard people talk about the change, and it sounded like something that just there was like a decisive moment. And I think when I look back now from when I started to be perimenopausal, I would say that was probably at least 10 years ago, actually, when suddenly sometimes I'd find I was incredibly just wet with sweat for no reason at all. And it'd be like, oh, wow, how's my body done that? Mm. Not very often and not very distressingly, but kind of just like a new thing that my body was doing. And then the first time that I had a period that wasn't a regular period, I think, you know, that was the start of my periods becoming irregular for my perimenopausal periods. But I was like, oh gosh, you know, do I have some kind of gynecological cancer? And, you know, this go to the doctor if you're bleeding after sex, which I was just having a period when I wasn't due a period, but I thought I was dying. You know, but with hindsight, I think, you know, that was probably when my period started to become irregular. So I hadn't thought what perimenopause would be like, or I just hadn't thought about what it would be like for myself.
But I think that's part of the issue, isn't it? Is that we're having to navigate quite a lot of this stuff on our own. And because a lot of it is very physical, actually, when you start off, I mean, for myself, I've had exactly what you've described where, and it's not a constant thing, but it's that thing, I would say I've noticed it in the last 18 months. So there's been moments where it's happened to me where I've had, maybe it's been a month or some, you know, sort of a short period of time, but enough so that I've noted it, where I've been distinctly more stinky, basically. Can't put it any other way. Really.
Oh, I've forgotten about that. Yeah.
Really, really stinky, and kind of like having to, you know, coming home, having, I don't know, gone out and worked for the day, and then coming home 3 o'clock and thinking, I need to change my top. Why am I having to change my top? This is ridiculous, you know. And a completely different smell to the way that I would normally smell.
Yeah.
And then that sort of goes. And then I had night sweats, but not, I mean, they weren't sort of dramatic. I know some women obviously have the worst, you know, literally drenched sort of in sweat. But for me, it was just that I would wake up at the same time every single night, and I was very aware of feeling clammy and kind of hot. And I would then take my nightshirt off, and then I would be able to go back to sleep, no problem. You know, it wasn't a kind of big drama, but it was still something that I thought, this is happening quite a lot, you know. And I was getting a lot of interrupted sleep. But that was definitely not something, I wasn't then immediately going, oh, okay, so this is perimenopause. So this is the kind of the changing landscape of my body. And I did go to the doctor last year to sort of flag it up, because there was a few other things happening. Nothing on the list, you know. Like nothing on the menopausal symptom list that I was like, oh, well, but I thought, well, I'll go and talk to her. And, you know, there was a real sense of dismissal. Well, it was just, oh, are you still having regular periods? Yes. That's, you're not menopausal then. And that was sort of the end. I was like, okay, I think perimenopause is recognized amongst women. I think we as a tribe all talk about it and understand what it means. But I still think that there's things that can happen to women that are perimenopausal symptoms because they're unique to that person. And really, I mean, I do hate the change. It's interesting that you said that that was something that you were kind of, and I think I would have done as well, actually, definitely. My mum talked about the change. But it is, I mean, essentially that's what it is. Your body is changing. So any changes that we experience, like being more stinky, having problems with lubrication, forgetful, anything that's sort of slightly different to what we're used to could be attributed to perimenopause. But I don't think people necessarily think that's the case.
Yeah, and so much of what you've said there is resonant for me. I'd forgotten about the smell thing completely. And actually that's changed again for me now, but I do remember having probably about 8 months where that really changed. And I remember thinking, gosh, my mum's armpits used to smell like that. Mm. But now that isn't an issue for me at the moment. And when I say I forgot about that, of course, there is that memory thing. But it, there's a lady that I talk to who's a herbalist, and she's prescribed some herbs, which I have every other day. And that's just made such a difference for my mental clarity. I'm so thankful for Kath, because
So what are they?
Oh, I'd have to go down and get the bottle. I don't memorize it. That's her job. I'm really glad to do that. I mean, she has explained what they are all for and what they're called. It's not like it's a big secret, but that's completely resurrected my mental function. Well, pretty much anyway.
Wow. if you are happy to share that information with me, because I can just pop it in the information on this episode.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It just means that women could, because that's one of the other things that I'm hoping will come out of this podcast, is that there's so many, because you mentioned something in your information about magnesium, which we'll come into onto in a minute, is that there is, so it's, you know, it's about a solution. It's like an individual solution, and every woman needs to kind of have that opportunity to go, okay, well, that woman uses magnesium to sort this thing out, so I'm going to try that, maybe that will work for me, but this woman uses that, so, and then they can find and navigate their way. But I do still think the medical profession needs to have a bit more nous about the whole situation. Because as usual, I think women are having to do it. Sisters are having to do it for themselves a little bit too much here.
And I think some GPs are just really interested, aren't they? And it's their thing and they're fantastic. And then others, it just isn't their thing. And maybe they had no training on it at college, just like, probably they had no training about nutrition or how to talk to people when they're dying, or, you know, other really useful things. It's just not been part of their training or experience. We have a really great GP practice, actually, so I just have to put in a little.
So I was going to really ask you what your experience was. At what point did you go to see your doctor about menopause, or have you? What's your...
No. No, I haven't. I did phone them up, because I now have one of those little estrogen pills that I pop inside me twice a week. And that's really helped with the vaginal dryness situation. And I use a really good lubricant, which I can talk about if you want as well.
Yeah.
I just phoned my GP about that. Maybe that's even been since the whole COVID thing, because otherwise I would have an appointment. But we just spoke about it on the phone, and she was fine to prescribe that for me, and it's been really helpful.
But you were able to ask for that because you knew exactly what it was and what was happening.
I knew. Because there's a lady called Samantha Evans, I don't know if you've interviewed her, she used to be a nurse and now she has a sex toys company, and she's just been such a font of information for me, for patients over the years, for things I've been able to ask her. And so I guess, you know, for people like her, I've been able to pick her brains, and one of my friends who'd used it as well. So that, yeah, I guess it gave me a real head start for talking to my GP.
That's really interesting, actually, because another one of my the ladies in my podcast, she and I, this was after we'd had our interview, but we were talking about various things and ended up talking about sex toys. And she, because she had she had vaginal atrophy,
right.
Which just really horrible for her. And there, it was a very, it was a long time sort of, where she didn't know why. So, you know, it was just very difficult and distressing, essentially. Anyway, that came up, and we ended up, and she told me about the fact that most sex toys, sort of off the shelf, you know, Ann Summers, Rabbit, what's it? The coating for them actually is very, very bad for the vaginal skin. And can, especially at this time in our lives, can really sort of destroy it, you know, work towards destroying. I suppose it depends how often you use them, but which I had, you know, no idea about. And I don't know how many women will have made that connection between the fact that when they use their sex toy, their vibrator, then afterwards, actually, they feel a bit uncomfortable, but they just put it down to, oh, well, you know, maybe I've got a bit of this, or I've been wearing trousers too long, or whatever. But actually, it's this very specific thing that the the coating, the flates, or I know she gave it a particular word. So she was talking about Joe's Divine Sex Toys. Is that anything? Oh,
same company.
Is it? So that's Samantha. Interesting.
Yeah, and she's so passionate about women's health, really, and it being safe for people. And I think the other thing about sex toys, for penetrative sex toys and vibration in the vulval area, for women who've maybe got episiotomy scarring, that can change how our scarring is when we become menopausal. And so it's really important that that area is as supple and has a good circulation supply that it can, really. So, there are lots of reasons why people might use sex toys as well for their vulval area, as well as pleasure. And the other thing, I think, which potentially we're up against in a heterosexual relationship at this sort of age, if you've got a similar aged male partner, is that they may be experiencing more erectile issues as well, if they've perhaps got blood disorder, cardiac disorders or diabetes or stress work. And so potentially you're in a situation where one person is a little bit dry, and so maybe it's scary to have penetrative sex, and a partner who feels like they're not performing, which I think is such an unfortunate word for people to use about.
Oh my God.
But I understand why people do use the word, but it makes me feel very sad to the core. And again, I suppose through work, I've met so many people who will never have an erection again, either because they no longer have their penis or because their treatment means they won't. And it's such a spectrum, isn't it? Sensuous and sexual pleasure. Anyway, gosh, we're having a massive tangent now, aren't we?
No. This is a good tangent, because I think it's all interlinked. It's all joined up. And I think that there are women out there who... This very aspect of our sensual and sexual selves is at the core of why there's a fear about menopause, because it's like society is saying you can no longer be a sexual and sensual woman because your ovaries are dying, or your function as a woman is diminishing. So therefore you can't be this person. But also the fact that our vaginas might be changing. We might be experiencing some irritation, some dryness. We might be experiencing some really severe dryness, actually, which is incredibly uncomfortable, makes it difficult for us to function. And all of
not just sexual function, but just even walking for some people. Sorry to interrupt.
No.
It's not just even around the whole penetrative sex thing. I've worked with people who are so sore that they can't even walk comfortably because they're so dry. And gosh, how must that feel? Anyway, sorry to interrupt. Oh, and the other thing, I'm remembering, a lady called Michelle Lyons, a women's health physio, who's another font of information, in my opinion. And I remember hearing her say, and sorry, Michelle, if you're listening, but I'm paraphrasing, about, we moisturise our faces more, and as we get older, if we need to moisturise more, we need to moisturise the vulval area. And it's kind of obvious, isn't it? But it's not obvious, because we don't always talk about it or know that it's possible.
So from your perspective, was the vaginal dryness one of the first things that you became aware of, or that you felt that you needed to then sort of sort out, gain treatment for? Or was there other symptoms prior to that point?
I think the palpitations, my heart palpitations, would have been more of a thing. And again, they weren't kind of shocking, because my favourite aunt used to have those. So it kind of didn't feel like an alarming health event. And I know probably we should both put in a health warning here now about seeing a GP and going to A&E and all of those things. But I guess for me, I just that didn't feel like a route I needed to take. And there's a lady, Nicola Garrett, who I know locally, who has Exhale Health, who's a menopause specialist. And I guess, and she's also a really skilled body worker. So I guess we've just known each other. We've been in the same pond, I suppose, of women's health. Yeah. And so because she has experience of the menopause, and so it was easy for me to buy magnesium spray for her, and it's just made it okay. I very rarely have a palpitation now. I did stop using it for a few days, because when I moved house, I just forgot actually to use it every day, and also I wasn't sure where it was, and I suddenly thought, gosh, I've been 5 days without my magnesium spray, maybe I don't need it anymore. And I went few weeks, maybe a couple of months, even certainly a good chunk of weeks, and didn't need it, and then they were back, so I do use it again now. So maybe they'll come and go, or I don't know, but they were horrible.
Do you, when you say a magnesium spray, so is this something that you spray into your mouth or is it topical?
Oh, right. Yeah, really good question on my skin.
So you just spray, and is it anywhere or does it, is it specific areas?
Yeah, apparently you can spray it anywhere. I tend to vary where I spray it on my body and I wouldn't spray it on my face. I have tasted it. It's not my choice of flavour. just because the spray's been in the room and I've kind of walked through it. And it can be quite tingly. I think, I'm not an expert on magnesium spray, so I won't say lots of stuff that I think. But I spray it on different bits of my body or my limbs, and that seems to work.
That's had a really marked impact on that.
Definitely. And definitely. It's made a really big difference. And I'm so thankful for that because that was a horrid symptom. I could feel quite unwell with that. And I'm always well. I'm really thankful for my health.
Yeah. And then let's talk about vaginal dryness. So what have you done for that? And again, you didn't go to a GP for that. So what have you done for that? And what do you use?
So several years ago, I met a lady from the Yes, Yes, Yes Organic Lubricant Company at a cancer conference. And because they've been sending me sachets to let patients try for years. As a physio, I'm not allowed to recommend brand products. So I always have to be really clear that I'm not recommending it as a product. But for people, they're just so pleased to try something. And because it's organic as well, for some people who've had cancer, they're really, really careful about what they put inside their bodies and on their skin. Mm. So I guess it was just obvious for me to try those. And they've been fantastic for me. And then having the estrogen pill inside twice a week as well has made a really big difference.
Is that a pill?
One of those little plastic sticks. And gosh, it's great now because I have Vagirux rather than Vagifem. So you use the same plastic inserter now for the whole pack rather than having a separate plastic thing every time you use it. So that's really great from the sustainability and environmental point of view. Although actually, personally, I'd be happy with using my finger. But I guess for some people, they maybe wouldn't be. But it's probably not something you'd want to do when you were drunk, I imagine, or in the dark, doing that because... Quite a faff. I don't know if that's something you do.
And you get your partner to do it. You know, have a little bit of fun with that. Here's my estrogen pessary. Go crazy. See what you do. I know we're getting into the brass tacks, but I genuinely think this is really, really helpful for women who might be not even knowing that this is something that is attributed to menopause. So with the lubrication, do you use that just? When you know you're going to have sex, or do you, is it just a daily sort of, I do my face, I do my vag? Pardon the French.
No, that's a really good question. I do try to remember to moisturise my vulval area regularly, and sometimes I do remember and sometimes I don't. And it's better if I do remember, but I don't need to do it every day. But if I do it maybe, say, twice a week, that is nicer for my skin, definitely. And definitely if I'm going to be making love or having sex or anything on that spectrum, it's nice to have a pot or a tube or a sachet handy. And I think I'm very fortunate that I'm in a relationship where it's just really... I don't know if you've seen the Esther Perel things about relationships. She has this really good thing talking about, and again, I'm paraphrasing terribly here probably, but she talks about having really great sex through a monogamous relationship and how, you know, if you want to play tennis with people, you make sure you've got time in the diary and you have the best equipment and you've got energy and, you know, you're there at the same time. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's the same for me. It's such a wonderful thing to share with my partner. And so, you know, having some lubricant handy would be obvious, really. And it's fun as well. I'm really sorry, children, if you're listening. They'll be horrified, won't they? But you know, it's fun. I think, how did I get to this age and never have experimented with lubricants before? Because actually it's really good fun sometimes as well. So,
absolutely.
You know, I know I'm fortunate that I'm in a relationship where we can just talk about stuff and it, you know, that it's not difficult or embarrassing. And I know that it is for some people, but But, you know, maybe give it a try. But your partner might be interested.
Leah, I have to say that I can't imagine you being in a relationship where it's not going to be possible to talk about sex, because I can't imagine that you just wouldn't do that. Which on a sidebar makes me extremely happy. Just a bit of context for listeners. So I know Leah because I used to teach her son. So my initial context for Leah was just as this really lovely, really lovely, quite quiet and very considerate mum to a chap that I was teaching who's now an actor. So that was kind of my, you know, that's how I know Leah. And then as I've known more Leah separately, this Leah has emerged who will talk about vibrators and vaginal dryness. And so that makes me extremely happy that we've had that full circle moment where the development of our relationship has meant that we're now face to face talking about sex, which is great. And yes, Will, probably you don't want to hear about either one of us doing this situation. But, sorry, mate. There we are. That's life. But I do think it's, I mean, I do think it's key. I think that us as sexual beings, I think, one of the reasons why this podcast is existing is because of wanting to open up the conversations and want to sort of change the taboo. But the idea has developed as I've gone through these interviews that it also really speaks to the way society places a value on us. I've talked about this in previous episodes, so I won't yam on about it too much, but that idea that we are just sort of, we have a purpose, which is to have children and sort of be these sexual, sexy sort of beings on earth who are there to provide entertainment and visual pleasure to men. I mean, we can obviously, not all women in relationship with men, but, you know, in terms of the societal kind of, let's look at it, it feels like that. And so therefore, when we go through menopause, it's like we no longer have those feelings. We no longer want to have sex. And I think it's very easy to diminish women in that way. And I think it's very easy for women to sort of feel like they can't say, actually, I absolutely want to still have sex. But I really appreciate what you're saying about the idea of not going into it like you know, when you're 17, you're 25 or whatever, and you're having sex, you don't have to necessarily think about all of the things. You know, you can rock up, everything's ready, everybody's kind of ready to go at a moment's notice, and you can just get on with it. But I think when you get older, there does need to be more thought placed into that. You need to, as you say, make time, but also think, what do we need to be around us to make this work? And there shouldn't be any shame attached to that idea of, well, yeah, we do need a bit more time, or we might need some help, or we might need some lubrication, or we might need to watch something or play with something or play with each other with toys to actually, you know, have a really, really lovely and enjoyable time. I still think that there's an irksomeness about that where we yearn too much to try and be our 20-something selves. I wouldn't be my 20-something self if you paid me. You know, I just sort of think, I mean, it was an interesting time, but I would take myself at this age any day. What about you?
Gosh, there's lots of really interesting things there. Yes, I'm glad the age I am now with the partner that I'm with now. And I think, well, I guess I can only speak for myself, but, you know, I feel like I have fantastic sex now because it's someone that I can talk to and ask stuff, but also because I'm older and I'm, you know, I'm in the second half of my life now at 55, and it might be a really long half or it might be a very short half. I don't know, but I'd like it to be as good as it can be. And so open communication and also saying, this is what I would like for myself. You know, that's where I'm up to in life, really. Yes. So about sex, I really enjoy having sex. I love having sex, but I often don't feel in the mood, and that's really changed. And I can remember the moment it happened. It was like a light switch, one of those clunky old-fashioned light switches in my brain went like that, and it was just like, I just don't feel turned on anymore. And honestly, it was that when I said earlier on about the change sounding like it's an event, that would be an event. So actually, I can still feel very aroused and still have a fantastic time, but I do maybe have to make sure there's time for it rather than expecting that to happen spontaneously. It can still and does, but I would say there's definitely been a change with that.
Yes. I mean, loss of libido is really well documented, and it's one of the things that they talk about. But loss of libido and not having sex are two very, very different things. And I mean, I've had conversations with women where they've said, in fact, I remember having a conversation with a woman, this was years ago, but she was a bit older than me at the time. And her husband was sitting there, and she said, I mean, so you don't want to do it. You don't want to do it, but you get on with it. And, you know, when you're actually in the action and you're having the sex, it's fine, isn't it? It's absolutely. I was sitting there thinking, wow, your husband must feel like a god right now, you know, basically saying, I sort of let it go, I let it happen, and it's fine. I mean, fine is never a descriptor that you want to apply to your sex life, is it? It's fine. But I do, I remember at the time, it was very early on in my marriage, which meant that, you know, we were sort of shagging like bunnies, really. So I couldn't relate, really, and sort of just said, oh, right, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But now later, I do definitely know what she means. And I think that having a continued physical relationship, whether it's penetrative or not, with your partner is really important in terms of maintaining connection, especially when we're all really busy. I mean, certainly I find that between me and Johnny, you know, he's a very busy teacher. I've got a lot of projects on and I'm constantly doing stuff. And it's not the only way we connect, but it is an important way that we do connect. And I do find myself going, you know, we must have sex this weekend, which might sound really kind of brutal and a bit sort of calculating. And I would admit, and he knows this, because I think you and I are very similar in that when we feel something, we say it, and we think it's really important to communicate with our partners so that there's, even if they don't want to, I will say to Johnny, you know, I'm not really into it, but, you know, and then it's just a question of, I suppose, approaching it differently at that point. So rather than it being that sort of hot and heavy, wow, we're both really here and we're really aroused and let's go now. It's more, you know, let's think about touch. Let's think about talking for a while. Let's think about just being close and being naked. I really hope Johnny doesn't mind me talking about this, but I think it's all of that. And I think there's also a confidence to that, which comes with being older, where you don't feel like you have to be that porn queen. You know, I mean, we have veered off into sex a lot, but I think it's hugely relevant. That idea that we get that we have to be the sort of back arching, you know, sort of making the faces and sort of pouting that we are meant to be. And, you know, certainly for me in our 20s, where we think that we have to be this person. And actually, sex when you're older, especially with someone who you're in a relationship with, is a very different thing. And we should embrace that and go, brilliant, what can we do today? You know, what will this be now? We should also be immensely proud of the fact that we are still having sex and that we're still, we're able to adapt, I suppose. I think that's what I'm trying to say, that we're able to sort of say, well, where am I now? You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. And we're very fortunate, aren't we, to have a loving, respectful partner as well. And I, when you were saying a lot of that, the word intimacy kept coming up for me. And I think that's often used as a euphemism for sex. But actually, for me, intimacy is a massive spectrum. And I think we're very fortunate if we can have intimacy. And when you say about it being different, and that being naked together, there's a lady called Grandma Williams, who's also a physiotherapist, actually, that you can find on Twitter. And I remember her writing things about, you know, how great it is that, you know, you don't have to get up early in the morning. You can lie in bed together for ages. And again, I'm paraphrasing. Apologies if you're listening, Grandma Williams, Joyce. You know, but I think, wow, yeah, how wonderful will that be if I ever get to retire? And, you know, just to have the morning in bed together, enjoying one another. Mm. Or it doesn't have to be the morning. But it's just good to be creative, isn't it? And also there's so many different chapters in life, aren't there? And for you and I, we've both been fortunate that we have children, haven't we? And so there are different chapters, aren't they? Well, like when they're little, what's possible in your life? And then as they get older, what's possible in your life? They're different. Mm. And different for you and different for me as well, I'm sure. Mm. We're veering off menopause now.
Well, we are and we aren't, because I think menopause is a very all-encompassing umbrella, isn't it? And I mean, yes, there's a lot of things that are very, you know, very specific, but I do think that there is that whole period of your life, that whole part, whether you start in your 40s or late 30s or whatever it is, and then for us, you know, then approaching 50s into our 50s, that whole period of our life represents so many different things. I mean, I've known you for years, and you know, you've retrained, you've moved where you live, you've changed partners. You know, there's been so many different stages. Mm-hmm. And actually, from my perspective, and this is a very outside perspective, I think that you now are a sort of glowing, you know, you're radiant with happiness. So that I can see that all of these changes and these this new phase in your life has brought this immense joy to you, and you feel very confident about who you are and choices that you've made. And I think that is specific to this time in your life. And I think that that's something that women, I think that that's something that society, I think we all know that. We all know that we're fucking awesome in our 40s and 50s.
Yeah,
But I just don't know if society has caught up with that yet.
No, I think we can still be incredibly invisible, actually. Mm. And I can really remember slightly older friends describing that and me not knowing what they meant and then really knowing what it meant. And now I guess I don't care so much. But I do care sometimes. I know we've had a year of not meeting up, but, for example, being at a business meetings, mostly I'm at women in business meetings, but I remember being at one with men and women, and just the man that I was talking to being so disinterested in what I was saying, you know, and he was looking for a younger, more fertile looking model, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it was so insulting, because actually he was wasting my time. So I did say, you know, let's just finish the conversation. I can see you looking for someone more interesting. And he was embarrassed, but I just thought, I'm not wasting another moment of my time with you gazing around the room looking for a more attractive woman. It's too late. Like I said, you know, it may be a long shot. Or short second half. I haven't time to waste now with people like that. Mm. I really haven't. Oh, I'm very angry now, aren't I?
No, you're not. You're just sort of reflecting on things that have happened to you. But I mean, do you think that the menopausal process has given you access to those feelings more so? Do you know what I'm saying by that? Like, I know that irritability and kind of, you know, they talk about the rage and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's very easy for men or society to sort of go, oh, it's just hormonal, so therefore we don't need to listen to what she's saying in this moment of anger because it's just hormonal. But I often say, and have said to Johnny in the past, it may be that my hormones have changed the filter. So they've drawn up the draw, you know, or they've let down the drawbridge, or whatever analogy you want to make. But that doesn't mean that what I'm saying isn't how I feel. It's just that I don't always say it because I sort of feel like, well, I don't want to make a fuss, or, you know, it's not worth making a fuss. But I mean, does that make sense to you? Do you understand what I mean?
I think I do. The phrase about the filter, you know, the filter being different, I think is really relevant, because we, when I say what I say, I do really mean it. And yes, it probably is a bit less filtered than it used to be sometimes anyway, but why not? Because actually, if I'm not honest about who I am and how I feel, then how can people ever know me?
Yeah. So in that moment of invisibility, you don't get that, but you don't feel that in your personal life, presumably.
No, not at all. No, I feel very seen and known, and I'm very thankful for that. Mm. And I know that's not the case for some women at my stage of life. I know I'm very fortunate to have that.
And of course, one of the main things about this as well is, well, not the main things, but one of the things I think will hopefully begin to happen more and more, but I imagine that you already do, is that do you talk to your daughter about menopause and the things that you've gone through?
Yes, I think I've always been really open about our bodies and their functions. That's such an undelighting word, isn't it? But, but yes, I can remember them saying to me, I don't know if they'll remember this, but years ago, just saying, "Mom, we don't mind you using words like breast and vagina, but please don't say them when we're outside." I guess, yeah, it's just, I mean, partly I'm a physio, aren't I? So anatomy's, you know, our body parts have names, don't they?
Yeah, oh, and, yes, God, yeah.
And I guess I'm a really embodied person. So, yes, I do talk about it. And I suppose when, I mean, I won't mention any more names, but I can think of times when there've been like a delivery of organic lubricant sachets on the table when we've been eating with visitors. And I just think, dear. But actually, I think it's okay, because that is part of who I am. Mm. With my work, I want people to be continent if they can be, and have the best sexual and sensuous intimate lives they can have. The people I work with who have or have had cancer have often endured dreadful treatment to survive, and I would hope that they can have more than just surviving. Although I know some people are thankful for that. I haven't ever had cancer, so I don't mean to be rude assuming things like that, but it you know, physios are interested in whether people get back to their golf and their tennis, so if people are wanting to have a good sex life then, or a sex life again anyway. Yeah, so yes, I definitely talk to both of the children, though, because actually if my son is in a heterosexual relationship, he may live with a menopausal woman at some point, so yes, it's really important for him to know as well, actually.
Yeah.
And I would feel that I would talk to Elizabeth if she has a male partner. I would feel that it's okay to talk to him too, because yeah, I want the best for all of them.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, gosh, with the whole thing at the moment going on as well about women and male violence, you know, we're in a privileged position as mums, aren't we, to talk to our children if we have sons or daughters, people, you know, and the other little children that pass through our hands and hearts when we're caring for them, to try and teach respect and also understanding of their own feelings, because... Mm. It's a mess. I mean, that's a whole other set of podcasts, though, isn't it? But yeah, yes, I would definitely.
It is, but that, you know, I don't think any of these issues stand alone. It's easy, you know. I think there's the whole kind of societal view of women is part and parcel of it, isn't there? And older women, yeah, the issues that affect us are probably different to the woman walking home who's in her 20s. Like, I do think that there is a change, but. You know, there is still work to be done. And it's really interesting what you're saying about talking to the children, because obviously, you know, I've got two small boys. Well, they're not that small anymore, actually, but 10 and 8. And not so much with Billy, because he's still quite a young child in his head. But with Jack, who's now 10 and is very quite an advanced 10. Yes, I'm having conversations and, you know, I think I've talked to him about periods. I've talked to him about how there might be girls in his class who might be feeling, you know, because girls start their periods so much younger these days. And so there's no way of knowing that a girl in his class who's 10, I mean, I started my periods at 11 when I was still in junior school. So I was in year 6, essentially. So I just sort of want them to have a real understanding, and it's not about they only have to think about women and women are, you know, it's about that kind of, yeah, just being respectful and having some kindness and trying to remember that this situation that women are going through, hormonal imbalance, is a thing that's happening to us. It's not mm-hmm. something that we are creating. For me, that's always been a really strong distinction for people to try and understand, that it's not a choice that we're making. So there has to be some understanding of that from people who are around us, men or not, you know, whoever it is. Like in your information that you sent me, you talked about weight gain and then you talked about it falling off. I mean, I'm fascinated by the idea of weight falling off. It's never been something that I've experienced. But you talked about different eating. So can you tell me a bit about what happened there?
I suppose I just felt like I needed to be a bit more mindful about what I was eating and when I was eating. And I've been really fortunate because for quite a while I've lived on my own predominantly, and also I've worked for myself. So it's been relatively easy to eat what I would like when I would like, because it is different, I think, when you're living with someone or feeding hordes of kids. Yes. So I'm privileged in that position, and privileged because I understand about nutrition and I can afford to buy fresh food as well, and that I've lived somewhere where I can access my own grown vegetables or, you know, beautiful organic food shop. So yes, generally now at lunchtime I would have something like spinach and a small piece of salmon and maybe a couple of boiled egg yolks, and I feel really full having eaten something like that. Don't feel like I need to snack. And yeah, changing so that perhaps in the morning, I mean, for years I've been eating nuts and cereal and, you know, like oats and nuts and yogurt and fresh fruit and stuff for breakfast, and I love that, so it's easy for me to eat like that. And then sometimes I might have that again for supper if that's what I fancy, and then have very much kind of vegetables and protein at lunchtime. And yeah, it really changed.
Did you gain weight then? Did you notice that you'd gained weight and then you specifically thought...
Just kept getting bigger and bigger around my waist, and well, between my breasts and my hips, really, was just putting on fat and bulk all the time. And so my clothes didn't fit and it was uncomfortable bending forwards. And I just thought, I need to do something about this. I can't carry on, just from my health and comfort point of view, really. I mean, I guess for a long time I've thought any man who gets to see me naked's lucky anyway. They've already got all their Christmases and birthdays, haven't they? So it's not for someone else that I need to think about my body, but for my well-being and how I feel. And I just thought, surely there must be something that I can do to change this, because certainly exercising and calories wasn't the answer for me. But I do think we're all different. I wouldn't want to feel like I was an expert or being prescriptive about that. But for me, that's worked very well. And then for a few months, my eating patterns changed. And I was much more back onto carbs and vegetables and protein, maybe twice a day. Came straight back on again. So for me, I think it's definitely a what I'm eating metabolism thing, and maybe that will carry on changing. I don't know, but I just feel so much more satiated with my food if I eat something like salad and egg yolks or something at lunchtime. I've turned into a middle-aged woman. It makes me laugh, honestly, the kind of, you know, having a piece of fresh ginger with boiled water and stuff. You know, 20 years, I just thought, how funny, that's such a middle-aged woman thing to do. Well, I am a middle-aged woman well now, and I love it.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes. Oh, excellent. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I've definitely been more proactively thinking. I mean, I suppose I've always battled with my weight or my perception of my weight. It's very interesting. I have had a bit of a change in terms of sort of an acceptance of... I think I've just stopped trying to be this tiny person, which I will never be. So that's been something that I've had to work through. But I have been thinking more mindfully about food and introduced a huge amount of exercise. Not, I think my relationship with exercise is very interesting, because I hate burpees. I hate all of that sort of very high impact stuff. It's not for me. I find it really... I could do it for about 2 weeks, and that's a lie. I would probably do it for about 3 days and then would just think, I just don't want to do it. So I've just taken to walking. I'm doing huge amounts of walking each of my days, which I've found has been really, really transformative. And yeah, I suppose having a more mindful approach towards food, but not necessarily denying myself at all stages, you know. I'd love to find the formula. I mean, I love the fact that you feel like you've found the thing that really works for your body and your metabolism. I'm not sure that I have, so I'll keep you posted.
At the moment, I'll be interested. And when you say about transformative with walking, I can see in your face what that is for you as well, as you say that. And I think that just being able to enjoy movement, it's so invaluable. Mm. And also the weight bearing thing is really important for us. I mean, it was important a couple of decades back as well, but from osteoporosis prevention point of view, we need our weight bearing exercise.
You are a mind of information. And obviously, anyone who's listening who would like to get more information or work with Leah, then her information will be in the episode. If you just look at what, you know, the episode information, there'll be a link there to Leah's website. It's fascinating.
But also, you know, Anna, there are lots of women's health physios around the country, and it's our joy and passion. It really is. Mm. I know not lots of people do the scar work. I know it's quite niche, the skill set that I have. I'm not saying I'm the only one at all. I'm not. But I know I've been really blessed with the trainings that I've done and the people I've worked with patient-wise. I've learned so much. But, you know, women, for women's health physios, we're so, and also there are men's health physios too, you know, so if you, because 1 in 8 or 9 men have incontinence as well, although it's 1 in 3 women in the UK would have stress incontinence of urine. Some people leak feces as well. But, you know, it, for us, it's not embarrassing. It's our joy and passion to want people to be as whole as possible. So if you are having trouble and you've tried doing pelvic floor exercises, oh, and listen to Elaine Miller's little clip on Woman's Hour about doing your pelvic floor, not farting in the lid and all of that. But, you know, it's not embarrassing for us. It's our job. And like I think it's Ramona Horton said this thing, you know, it's just like any other musculoskeletal stuff. It's just doing it in a cave, which I thought was a really lovely way of putting it. You know, it's not embarrassing for us. So if you've tried doing your pelvic floor exercises and you're still not continent, do get your GP to refer you to the women's health physio at your local hospital.
Yeah, brilliant.
We will probably have seen it or heard it before. And if we haven't, gosh, what a privilege to learn something new.
Yeah. Oh, you're so lovely. You're so amazing. And can I just say that you look amazing.
Oh, thank you. It's my new facial thing that I'm doing.
Yeah, your skin is amazing. I mean, you're I know the listeners can't see you, but you know, you're sort of glowing. You're sort of radiant. Mm. You've got a radiant face. And of course, you're very smiley and beautiful. So that also helps. Well, listen, Leah, we probably could talk for another hour, but we're going to leave it there. And thank you so much for all of your wonderful wisdom, actually, just amazing frankness and openness, which is so appreciated, but also the wisdom that is attached to that. So bless you, and thank you so much for being with me.
Oh, thank you, Anna. It's been a real joy to have time with you. Thank you.
Brilliant. So hopefully you might have picked up some excellent tips in that episode, and I'm really grateful to Leah for her openness and hope it benefits you out there. Or maybe you were just screaming yes in agreement, not in a kind of Meg Ryan way, or maybe you were. Fabulous. If you'd like to learn more about Leah's practice as a physiotherapist, the link is in the show notes. If you would like to get involved with Taking on the Change, please get in touch. Pop us an email at friendsforlifeproductions@gmail.com, or you can find me and a friend on Twitter and Instagram. And don't forget to follow, like and subscribe to Taking on the Change on Spotify, Apple or your usual podcast provider. Taking on the Change is a Friends for Life production. It was created by Anna Friend and produced by Samuel Jones.